This is KMUN News. I'm Skylar Butenchin.
I'm Katie Frankowitz.
It's Tuesday, March 10th.
A nonprofit that serves the North Coast Latinx community has landed major funding. The Oregon legislature has approved $1.9 million in lottery revenue bonds for Consejo Hispano's headquarters, Casa Mariposa, based out of a former Lutheran church in downtown Astoria. That translates to about $1.7 million for the nonprofit. Executive Director Jenny Poole Radway called it a historic investment that will go directly to the organization's capital campaign to help secure full ownership of the building. The nonprofit purchased the church last year for $2 million, but Poole Radway says the building needs an additional $1 to $1.5 million in maintenance and repairs. She says full ownership of the building puts Consejo Hispano in a stronger position to take on the improvements responsibly and sustainably. Consejo's request to the legislature received support from across Clatsop County and other parts of the North Coast. To Poole Radway, the support was critical in landing the money in a challenging year for state funding. She told KMUN that, quote, "At a time when many Latinx families are feeling uncertainty and pressure, this investment is a reminder that we are valued, we are supported, and we are a part of the fabric of this region." Astoria Mayor Sean Fitzpatrick wrote that Casa Mariposa is, quote, "a win in multiple directions for the community." He noted that the church building is historic and one of many churches in Astoria in need of repurposing. This winter, Casa Mariposa provided space for an emergency warming center and also provides other community services. I'm Katie Frankowitz, reporting for KMUN.
A shipyard facility on Oregon's North Coast promised to strengthen and expand the regional maritime industry. Hayak Tongue Point, a tug and barge building company, was behind the ambitious plans for the facility. But now, a lawsuit brought by one of the company's key tenants alleges something very different has occurred. KMUN's Katie Frankowitz reports.
Isla Hodges recently had her 75-foot-long commercial fishing boat hauled at North Tongue Point in Astoria. It was a process. WCT Marine and Construction, one of Hayek's anchor tenants, used a trailer to haul out Hodges' boat, a process that is labor-intensive, time-consuming, and requires a high tide. It also places a limit on the size of vessels that can be hauled out. But on the tarmac, not far away, was a 1,500-ton travel lift that could have easily and quickly hoisted Hodges' boat, and even larger vessels. Except WCT is no longer using it. In fact, it's not clear anyone is using it right now, despite expectations that the lift would haul out as many as 50 boats in its first year of operation. A lawsuit filed by WCT against Hayek Tongue Point claims the travel lift has hoisted only two vessels since swinging into operation over a year ago: a barge and a private yacht belonging to Hayek's owner Gordon Smith. For Hodges and vessel operators who are looking forward to the shipyard facilities Hayek had planned at North Tongue Point, the current situation is part of a larger issue: a continuing lack of resources and maritime infrastructure on the lower Columbia River.
We can deal with it the way it is, but for progression, it really needs to be better. That is the best area, the Tongue Point, is one of the best areas you've got around, and it could handle lots of work if it was properly used.
North Tongue Point is about 4 miles east of downtown Astoria. A former naval base, the property includes large hangars, long piers, and important access to the Columbia River. But despite the site's inherent potential, various schemes for the property over the years never quite came to fruition. So when Hayek Tongue Point bought the property in 2017 and announced ambitious plans to develop a large shipyard at the site, North Coast communities were sold. A key component of Hayek's proposal was the 1,500-ton travel lift, a type of boat lift that could quickly and efficiently pluck vessels out of the water for repair and inspection. There are other such lifts on the Oregon coast, but none capable of lifting vessels as large as what Hayek was going to be able to handle. With shipyard options disappearing in the Pacific Northwest, Hayek's facility was poised to fill an important gap. Bruce Jones, now the executive director of the Columbia River Maritime Museum in Astoria, was mayor of Astoria at the time Hayek was developing its plans for North Tongue Point. He signed a letter of support for Hayek's shipyard project and, along with other city councilors, approved the city's part of a 15-year break on local property taxes.
And all those things kind of were aligned with our hope and our expectation that there would be job creation and the growth of a strong, growing maritime industrial capacity in Astoria to meet the region's shipbuilding, boat repair needs, and potentially even support growth of the Coast Guard presence here.
Local support was important, but Hayek's project also gained key support at the state level, landing around $21 million in public funding. Robert Dorn, a former co-owner of Hayek Tongue Point, predicted as many as 50 boats could be lifted, inspected, and repaired within the first year of the travel lift being operational. He estimated that 100 new jobs would also be created. But now Hayek faces two lawsuits from anchor tenants that claim a different reality. One complaint brought by WCT Marine and Construction alleges broken contracts and agreements, among other issues. The company claims Hayek has not addressed concerns about the condition of the travel lift and is charging rates that make the shipyard unable to compete with other regional facilities. Willie Torrestoya, the owner of WCT, says the company is prepared to take the matter as far as they can. He told KMUN the situation is unfortunate and disappointing, but that WCT can't be, quote, bullied. He said WCT needs to stand up for the vision Robert Dorn, representing Hayek, originally pitched to the North Coast and the broader maritime community. Another tenant, Bergeson Construction, has filed for foreclosure on a construction lien against Hayek for alleged non-payment of $700,000. Hayek has claimed Bergeson's work was incomplete and has rejected the substance and many details of WCT's claims. John High, executive vice president of Hayek Maritime, declined to comment on the lawsuits, telling KMUN only that the company was not the one to bring the lawsuits and is not interested in pursuing lawsuits with people. He said Hayek's goal remains the same, to develop the shipyard. But for locals invested in the shipyard's success, it isn't clear what comes next. Kevin Leahy, executive director of Clatsop Economic Development Resources, worked with Hayek and WCT early on in the shipyard's development. He helped facilitate local and state requests and was a vocal champion of the project.
Well, my takeaways is very concerning, obviously, right? And there's got to be a solution, and I don't know what it is.
KMUN reached out to Robert Dorn, the former co-owner at Hayek, but did not receive a response. Hayek confirmed that Dorn is no longer involved with Hayek. Hayek Tongue Point is a subsidiary of Hayek Maritime, itself a subsidiary of Hayek Holdings Delaware LLC. The owner of all of this is Gordon Smith, who is also a majority owner of Hayek Motorsports, a stock car racing team with a car that competes in the NASCAR Cup Series races. KMUN also reached out to other groups and individuals who helped push the Hayek project forward at North Tongue Point. Former State Senator Betsy Johnson supported Hayek's requests for state funding. She declined to be interviewed. Representatives with Business Oregon, the state's economic development agency, were also important advocates and facilitators for the project. They also declined to be interviewed. In an email, a spokesperson said Business Oregon would love to see the shipyard rise to its, quote, potential as a tremendous asset to the region and the economic driver that was first envisioned by Hayek and its partners. I'm Katie Frankowitz reporting. This story is part of a much longer story that you can read at kmun.org/news. On that webpage, you'll also find links to other local and regional news sources, as well as stories reported by the KMUN news team. You're listening to KMUN. A federal judge in Oregon ruled he would continue to strictly limit federal law enforcement's use of tear gas and other crowd control weapons on protesters outside the Portland ICE building. Oregon Public Broadcasting's Conrad Wilson reports.
U.S. District Court Judge Michael Simon found federal officers at the ICE building had an unwritten policy to use excessive force on nonviolent protesters, in part to chill their First Amendment rights. The judge's injunction applies to all peaceful protesters and journalists outside the Portland ICE building, not just those who sued. Attorney Ashley Elbies worked alongside the ACLU of Oregon representing protesters.
It sends a clear message that the government has to refrain from tear gassing and using munitions against its own people, merely for engaging in peaceful protest.
Judge Simon also wrote that he wants federal officers at the facility to wear some kind of identification. The ruling still allows crowd control devices so long as there's a specific and imminent threat of physical harm to officers or other people. The decision is likely to be appealed. I'm Conrad Wilson in Portland.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN news team. That includes host and production assistant Skylar Butenshin and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. Up next, you have This Week in Water with news headlines from across the world related to water. You're listening to KMUN.
Federal officials say the West is in the worst snow drought.
The worst snow drought.
Snow drought. I've never seen anything like it.
If you live in the U.S. Southwest, the meager snowpack in the Rockies is hard to ignore, and for good reason. It's the source of drinking water for millions and vital for agriculture. The question weighing on many people's minds is whether this could be our new normal.
Is it a sign of things to come? Climate models do suggest that snow droughts are likely to become more common in the future.
That's Peter Goebel, assistant state climatologist with the Colorado Climate Center. He says we're not done having cold, snowy winters, but
you may start to see the probability of events like this creep up through the coming years and decades.
In large part, he says, that's because as we heat up the atmosphere with greenhouse gases, precipitation will more likely fall as rain rather than snow, which will either evaporate or be taken up by plants before it can flow into waterways like the Colorado River.
Just based on what we're seeing both in our climate observations and some of our climate models, it makes sense to really prepare to do more with less.
But less could be more. At least that's the plan in Los Angeles. If less water is going to fall from the sky or come through aqueducts, the city will just make their own.
When we're done in the next 2 years, it'll be a new water supply for the city of LA, producing enough water for almost 500,000 people.
That's Jesus Gonzalez with the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. We're at the Tillman Water Reclamation Plant in the San Fernando Valley, just north of downtown LA. The facility treats wastewater from homes and businesses. Some of that clean water is used to irrigate parks, and the rest eventually flows to the ocean. But now, the plan is to store it underground. That's because the Tillman facility sits above a massive aquifer, over 200 square miles in size. Currently, the basin is at about half of its capacity, but it's a glass half full.
The city of LA has this tremendous resource, the San Fernando Groundwater Basin, the aquifer. It can hold almost 2 years of water supply for the entire city of LA.
A new advanced water purification facility at Tillman plans to fill that basin. Gonzalez and I are standing at the future plant's construction site, which is crawling with heavy equipment as cranes lift beams and concrete into place. He says the new water recycling facility will be the size of 3 Costco buildings stacked one on top of the other. When it comes online in 2027, most of the purified water it creates from homes and businesses will be stored in the aquifer for a not rainy day.
And now we have a source of locally controlled, drought-proof water supply that we could pump during the next drought.
That means a more resilient water source that's less vulnerable to earthquakes and less dependent on imported supplies from the Colorado River and Northern California, all without increasing water rates for customers, thanks to state and federal grants helping to offset the nearly $1 billion price tag. Had LA gone with a desalination plant, Gonzalez says it would have been 5 to 10 times more expensive and used way more energy.
It would be negligible in terms of the overall net effect on a customer's bill.
So after Tillman is complete and the next drought strikes, the city will retrieve water from the aquifer, clean it again, and distribute it to taps of LA customers who eventually will send it down their drains. In the past, that wastewater would have been treated at the Hyperion Water Reclamation Plant near LAX before being discharged to the ocean. Within the next 2 decades, as a part of the Pure Water Los Angeles initiative, Hyperion will also become a major recycling facility and send its purified water back to the San Fernando Valley to begin the loop again.
So in other words, the cycle and that closed system will continue.
So I was trying to explain the city's recycling plans to my mother before this interview, and she said,
"You mean they're making forever water?"
Very good. That's a great way of describing it. It's a cycle that almost can never end.
By 2040, Los Angeles plans to have 70% of its water supply coming from local sources, with most of that being recycled. So, as the expression goes, what happens in L.A. stays in L.A. For H2O Radio, I'm Franny Halperin.
You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN news team. That includes me, host and producer Skylar Butenchen, and news director Katie Frankowitz. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday, beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening.